we have an awful lot of news to talk about today, of course, but that song, which of course is a wonderful accordion version of My Way, was picked by our producer, Lisa Clark. My Way, and now the end is near, and as I face the final curtain, this is Lisa Clark. We are very sad to say her last show with us here at GPB. Lisa's going over to her old home at CNN, this time to work at HLN. We used to call it Headline News. She's going to be a segment producer on a new show with anchor Carol Costello. And we all here on this team are going to miss her greatly. She's been a wonderful part of the GPB political rewind
and
team.
And the best accordion player in the whole studio.
Oh, that's right. She played that herself. One quick news item, breaking news, literally just broke in the last 10 minutes. You know, Jim, there are a lot of hated politicians in Washington and around the country these days, but I don't think there's anybody in the country quite as hated as Martin Shkreli, who was the young man who bought out a pharmaceutical company and started jacking up prices on drugs that were necessary drugs for people who were in need, and did it with a kind of a smug attitude. He's just been convicted on 3 counts of fraud and will find himself in jail. So I just thought
there are only maybe 2 or 3 people that my wife would actually punch in the face. He's one of them.
All right. That's Jim Galloway, of course, the political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You read him on Thursdays and Sundays. What's the Sunday column?
This one, Melita knows about this one. This is on Monday, we will be marking the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Floyd Hoard, Jackson County prosecutor who was blown up by the Dixie Mafia back in 1967.
It led to Lester Maddox getting the Georgia Bureau Investigation to move into.
They took over and Tim Echols, who's with us today, you'll appreciate that. A member of the grand jury who indicted Floyd Hoard's killers was Bubba McDonald.
Wow.
Your fellow member of the state PSC.
Well, now that Jim has begun to introduce people on the panel, for which I'm appreciative, Tim Echols, of course, is a member of the Public Service
Committee. And I live in Jackson County, by the way.
In Jackson County. He is also one of the most prolific tweeters in state government today.
And one of the better ones, too.
Yeah, good one. And we always appreciate, Tim, the fact that you listen to Political Rewind and you tweet us your thoughts regularly. It's great to have you here. We're going to talk with you about what's next for Plant Vogel and also about some issues that relate to the Department of Energy, the Federal Department of Energy, in just a minute. Melita Hayes, Democratic activist. The founder of the WIN List, which is an organization dedicated to identifying and supporting women candidates who particularly are dealing with the issue of choice. Have I said it right this time, Melita?
Well, it's Melita Easters, darling.
What did I say?
Did I say
the other one? Oh, my God. I did that with my staff the other day. I apologize.
That's
Melita
okay.
Easters.
But WIN List elects Democratic pro-choice women to the Georgia General Assembly and statewide office.
All right. I apologize. There was a time in which you were known by that other name, but we know that wasn't the greatest chapter of your life, so I'm very sorry for that. You have an event coming up. Tell us about
it very quickly. We do, and we're very excited. We announced this at noon today. We have persuaded the 2 Democratic women running for governor, Stacey Abrams and Stacey Evans, both who have long ties to our organization, to appear on stage for the first time together on October the 2nd. The event will happen at the Carter Center. We will welcome press, and we'll have a robust conversation between these 2 women, and it'll be a wonderful way to kick off their campaign and let them tell everybody their vision for Georgia.
All right, we'll talk about it again as it approaches, but congratulations on what will probably be the first joint meeting of those 2 candidates for governor.
So it will indeed be.
Also with us today, former state representative Ed Lindsay represented Fulton County, was your primary focus, I think, right? Yeah, that was the
North
center of your district.
North Atlanta and Buckhead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And an attorney with Denton's.
That's right.
A partner at Denton's. You've done this show once before, haven't you, Ed? You were on here, I think, a couple of years back. Well, welcome back. All right, look, we know there's a lot of Trump news right now. We know that this news that a grand jury is sitting to look at issues related to the Russia investigation. We know that Trump has had transcripts released about his conversations with the president of Mexico, with the prime minister of Australia. We know that Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, has said today that he is going to crack down on leakers. And we know these are issues you want to talk about and hear about at some point. But Tim Echols, there's a very, very important issue right here in Georgia that is ongoing and is has such explosive consequences and ramifications. And that's the question of where we're headed with Plant Vogel's expansion, the building of two new towers. The Atlanta Constitution reported the other day costs are up to $25 billion to complete that expansion. We know that bankruptcy has created problems. I'm not sure how the construction is going to move on. So we're going to talk about that first, and everybody should jump in on this conversation. First of all, let me ask you the basic question, Tim. The AJC report was kind of stunning. $25 billion?
Yeah, I don't think the AJC report gave credit for the penalty payment that Toshiba's supposed to make. Now, granted, they haven't paid it yet, so maybe that's why they left it out, because it is a yet-to-be-paid almost $4 billion payment. And there were some other assumptions I think they made. So I don't know that I would agree with the amount, but one thing's for sure, it will be more money.
Give us the big picture. I mean, just kind of just walk step back and tell us what the basic situation is to people who haven't been listening.
Yeah, of course, many people have heard of Westinghouse. They've been building reactors, I think, since 1954, and they went bankrupt. They were our
Owned by Toshiba. Yeah,
they were owned by Toshiba, a very large Japanese company. And Toshiba themselves in a little bit of trouble now. And of course, everyone probably remembers the Fukushima accident in Japan, 2011. So this is this issue that we're in, I think, really has been exacerbated by the Fukushima accident, which caused more regulations around it for safety. And you can understand that. And then the Westinghouse bankruptcy, allowing them to kind of wiggle out of a very tight, fixed and firm contract that had caused Toshiba to have to write down, $4 or $5 billion. I mean, and there's more probably for them to write down. And this is part of what has put Toshiba in financial in the financial.
And now we've got the two Westinghouse plants in South Carolina that have been deep six.
The only other state that had construction of new nuclear reactors, South Carolina, and their contractors out of business.
And of course, it's a big difference between the two, that we've got 2.4 million customers in the Georgia Power Network. Remember, Georgia has 10 million people, 2.4 million Georgia Power customers. They only had about 700,000 to spread the cost out. And we have a federal loan guarantee. They didn't. That gave us a 50 basis points or a half a percent discount on our interest rate. So they were paying a premium. And so their rate shock is going to be about 18%, even though they don't have anything to show for.
So some of that language I get lost, to be honest with you. But Melita, I want to bring you in, because for people who think this is all happening on some elevated plane that we don't understand, and I in some ways think I don't understand it, where the rubber meets the road is Georgia Power customers are paying about $100 a year extra in costs for the Plant Vogel expansion. And as the costs escalate, it's Tim and his colleagues at the PSC are going to have to decide how much more we as ratepayers absorb.
And they've always been very kind to Georgia Power in passing that along to the consumer. And I think Tim is very lucky that he was reelected in 2016 for another 6-year term before these bills hit, because I think the consumers are not terribly happy about these increases they now will expect in their bills. And I know that you will see at least one very strong challenge to a public service commissioner in this next election. And it will be a woman who will announce her campaign at her own time, but she will have a lot more on her resume than making iced tea, this official state beverage.
Who's up? What incumbents are up?
Oh, I know what that means.
That means
she's this prospective candidate is going to be running against John Knoll in the Democratic primary.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is for Chuck Eaton's seat.
Ed, you want to jump in?
No sweet tea. Well, Georgia Power has basically been snake bit every time they build a nuclear reactor in Georgia. And the first two reactors out at Plant Vogtle were built in the 1980s, just after, and the construction started just after Three Mile Island. And as a result of that, new regulations came in place, new scrutiny came in place, new requirements for the construction came in place. So that construction took years longer than was expected, and the cost was much higher than was originally anticipated.
Eight times. Instead of $1 billion, it was $8 billion. Yeah. So it was substantial.
And then came along the idea to build the two additional reactors at Plant Vogtle. And I was in the General Assembly in 2009. I was part of the group that looked at this issue. It was a bipartisan group, both Republicans and Democrats. We sat down with Georgia Power, and the whole idea for front-end loading what ratepayers were going to have to pay one way or the other. Ratepayers are going to have to pay a certain amount for new construction. The question was, were we going to allow ratepayers to pay it after the construction or before the construction? And what was sold to us was, hey, you know, the problems of Three Mile Island are come and gone. We know how to build these. We can build them quicker. If you front-end load the ratepayers' requirements to pay, we can build it faster and cheaper. Well, then came along the tsunami in Japan in 2011, and once again, two things happened. Number one, new regulations came about as a result of that event, and on top of that, you had Westinghouse go into dire financial shape. So once again, we're faced with a nuclear power reactors that are going to cost several times what was originally anticipated and going to take a lot longer to build.
Tim, why don't you? I welcome your reaction to what you've already heard and ask you to also add to that what you think the sense is going to be of the PSC for passing on, assuming that the towers are going to be finished, and there's still questions whether Southern Company is committed to doing that with a new contractor, but react to what you heard.
Yeah, that's right. So first, let's talk about what Ed mentioned about Fukushima, and I think we will look back one day and say that Fukushima drove a dagger into the torso of nuclear power. It's yet to be seen whether it will kill new nuclear power. It could. But it shut down the German reactors, a lot of them, and Germany's going to shut down the rest of them in 2022, and it also shut down all the Japanese reactors. They had 42 of them. They're gradually putting them back online. They have four online. So now to the cost question, you know, that you've asked about, you know, we have a stipulation with Georgia Power. We have their name on the dotted line and giving them, upon completion, $5.68 billion. And
who's we?
Yeah, that would be the ratepayers of Georgia and the commission. We are the gatekeepers for that money. And so technically, right now, today, all that the ratepayers are committed to is $5.68, and we paid about $4.2 of that.
And is that the $100 additional cost that we're paying a year, those of us who are Georgia Power customers?
Yes.
No, it is not.
Okay.
What we've been paying is only the interest.
Yeah.
Interest.
Oh.
Yeah.
And
right.
the interest that we paid, so a little north of $1.5 billion, all total, you know, when it's done, we would have paid about $7.9 billion, about $8 billion, less the penalty payment from Toshiba, would have been about $6.2 billion on Georgia Power's portion. But Georgia Power is saying now, through their SEC filing, looks like they're going to need an extra 2 years and an extra $1.7 billion.
Let me ask you something, Tim, and you and I have talked about this before. But you have made the argument that there could be a national security interest in keeping nuclear technology alive. How much? I mean, number one, have you heard from the Department of Energy on this on this note? And two, can the Georgia PSC even take that into consideration?
Yeah, probably not. We can't take it into consideration. What I would like is the Trump administration to take that into consideration, because here's the national security argument. All the coal plants are being shut down, and they have big stacks of coal, and you know you have 30 days of energy sitting on the ground. Moving to natural gas, which is delivered real time. So some terrorist jumps over the pipeline fence in Louisiana or Mississippi or Alabama or Georgia, anywhere, just jump over, put a shape charge, some C4 on that, blow that compressor station, and now all the plants that are running on natural gas on the eastern seaboard, you know, are shut down. And that causes a lot of problems. That would be a national security issue. And so if you built more nuclear power, it is more reliable. You do have a year and a half worth of fuel loaded all at one time. So that's the national security argument.
Keep in mind that there are some, you know, basic, you know, for those of us who are concerned about global warming, who want to see us move away from a dependency on fossil fuels, nuclear power is one of those energy sources that can help us move away from that. And so for those folks who want to suddenly have us all pull away from nuclear power, I'm going, what happened to the concern over global warming? Yes, we need to look at renewable fuel. We need sources. We need to look at wind. We need to look at solar. We've got down in South Georgia, we've got solar panel farms, and those are all good and necessary. But nuclear power needs to be part of that mix. If we're really going to seriously pull away from our dependency on coal, for instance, we're going to have nuclear power as part of the mix.
But Melita, what I'm hearing Tim say, I mean, is that without regard to whether you think nuclear power needs to be in the mix or not, is the costs of this have become so staggering. What I think I heard Tim say is the $100 a year that I'm paying on top of my normal bill is nothing compared to what they're committing us as consumers, the PSE is, to what are going to be much, much bigger increases on our bills, is what I think I'm hearing him say.
I hate to use a Donald Trump word, but it's huge. And, you know, what is the distinction for Georgia being the last state in the United States still having active construction on nuclear power? What if we had put a third of that money towards solar? Because on that day when the sun doesn't come up tomorrow, we are in a real deep bit of trouble. Solar is as reliable as what you're saying for nuclear. So
Except after 6 o'clock at night.
But it stockpiles.
Mm-hmm. If you have batteries.
So wait, but all right. So Tim, I really want to go back to how our listeners may be impacted by all this. What is the PSC saying once we're not just paying the interest, but once we're paying that, each of us paying our share of the $5+ billion that PSC has committed ratepayers to paying, how much bigger is my Georgia Power bill going to
be? Yes, a total rate impact between 6% and 12% once it's all in.
6% and 12% of my current, of every customer's current bill?
That's correct. 6% to 12% rate increase. But look, if you're in South Carolina and you're waking up today watching environmentalists dance along the grave of that plant, you're going to have in South Carolina an 18% rate increase, and you're not going to have anything to show for it because they've shut down the plant, which is why we really need to finish it.
Let me ask you something, Ed.
Yeah.
Over here, okay. You're not running for re-election mm-hmm. right now. You're not running for any office.
My wife is happy about that.
Yeah. Okay. Was that 2009 vote to front load ratepayers' contributions to Georgia Power, was that a mistake?
Based on what we're seeing today, yeah. Based on what we knew in 2009, no. What we saw in 2009 was a way to build a plant that would, and for those of us who are worried about the environment, was a way to start divorce us from our dependency on coal quicker than simply relying on solar energy and other renewable sources. We had a economic plan in place that would allow the plant to be built cheaper That was the goal for front-end loading it, and quicker. And so, yeah, based on what we knew in 2009, it was a good idea. But, you know, circumstances change. And you know, do I regret that vote? You know, I look back and I say that I wish I knew what was going to happen in Japan in 2011 and what was going to happen to Westinghouse. But, you know, you can't always base your past concerns on what happened after you made a studied vote. I will say this. It was one of the more studied votes that the General Assembly made. It was deeply discussed. It was supported in a bipartisan fashion. And we thought it was a good idea at the time.
Tim, we've only got a few more minutes with you, and I want to do two things, if I may. Number one, just to wrap up this part of the conversation, when are we going to learn, when is Southern Company expected to announce whether, in fact, it does plan to continue the expansion with new contractors in place, understanding that even if they shut down, there's going to be a huge cost to shut the place down that consumers are going to end up being on the hook for? And when are we going to start paying, not on interest, but principal that has been committed for ratepayers to assess? If you just tell us that, and we're going to move on to one other quick issue
here. Yeah, so we are going to hear from Georgia Power at our regularly scheduled monitoring hearing about the additional cost. We think it's going to be between $1 and $1.7 billion of increase and additional 2 years of construction. We'll have hearings that we normally have on that.
When does that start?
And that'll start at the end of August. And then if, you know, Toshiba makes their payment of $300 million in October, that's the first of many that they're supposed to make, totaling almost four. Then in November, we will make a go or no-go vote on the project.
Okay. And we'll obviously, you know, we'd love to have you come back and keep talking with us about how this is all developing. But we do, Jim, there's another issue we want to address quickly while we have Tim. You had an item in your Political Insider blog today about it. Tim doesn't want to admit that he's going to war with Energy Secretary Rick Perry.
I'm not.
But he's not exactly becoming his closest friend.
Well, he's trying to raise some interesting issues, and
thank you, Jim.
We've got a U.S. Department of Energy that is assessing the national electrical grid. A leak of the of that report has said solar is a good thing, and then there's been some pushback on that and said maybe the report that's going to come out will kind of dismiss solar, and you are encouraging the Trump administration not to do that.
And you are doing it very diplomatically. I apologize for putting you at odds with the energy secretary.
Yeah, I'm not going to war with him because I need him to lobby Japan to keep Toshiba in business, so I'm not going to war with him. But it did give me pause, and I think that's what I said. You know, I am a Trump supporter. I voted for Donald Trump. I like the federalism that I see him using and like giving the EPA, having the EPA give states more authority. And all I want them to do is do the same on solar. Is that Georgia has made a lot of progress with solar. I don't want the federal government monkeying with the way that we're doing it. And I feel really good. Georgia's making a lot of strides. We've grown the program. And just leave us alone
You've got a piece on CNBC up.
Yes.
And you note that land prices in South Georgia are going up as a result of solar farms out there. I had no idea.
So when... You know, when you take some, you know, land like in Taylor County, kind of in between Columbus and Macon, and you that had maybe old peach trees on it or nothing on it, scrub brush on it, and you put very high-tech equipment like solar panels and inverters, it raises the value of that land. And these counties are benefiting from not only the increased land prices, but the tax revenue for their county.
And our listener, Ted Terry, who is the mayor out in Clarkston, has tweeted, Georgia doesn't have coal mines, fracking wells, or oil derricks, but we do have a lot of land, wind, and sun. So he's speaking to exactly
not
what
so
you're
much
talking
wind.
About.
No, yeah, we don't
yeah,
do so
wind
much
is
wind.
A problem. Well, except down on the coast, not even there, right? It's still not
really
as efficient, right? All right, look, we have run way over in terms of needing to get a break in, but that's because, Tim Echols, it's such a pleasure to have you in to talk with us. Will you, in fact, come back and continue being our link to what's going on with the PSC and how you're handling
it? Well, you know how much I love this show and how much I tweet to this show, so it would be wrong for me not to come back in
here. All right. Public Service Commissioner Tim Echols, we got to get a break in. You can tweet us at PoliticsGPB, as many of you already are, but let's take this break and come right back.
Christopher Kimball is bringing his new show, Milk Street Live, to the First Center in Atlanta, September 20th. He'll reveal cooking secrets from around the world, offer taste tests, and invite audience members to join in an onstage cooking contest. Support GPB now, and you'll receive two orchestra-level tickets to the show. Attend an exclusive pre-show meet and greet with Christopher Kimball, and receive his newest book, Milk Street, The New Home Cooking. Go to gpb.org/milkstreet. That's gpb.org/milkstreet. And thanks.
Thank you for choosing Georgia Public Broadcasting. You can listen live online at gpbnews.org. GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University, nationally recognized as a leader in innovative programs that help students earn their degrees. I'm Ellen Reinhart.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Former Republican state legislator, House member, Ed Lindsay joins us. Melita Easters is back. She's the founder of and continues to oversee the activities of the Georgia Win List. And, of course, Jim Galloway, the political writer for the AJC, is here. Tweet us at PoliticsGPB. Chad Braswell did. He says, we didn't and don't need new nuclear power. This is another example of corporations controlling government. Matt Schweitzer says, I don't understand why it seems like every nuclear power construction project, no matter where it is being built, seems to go over budget and over time. I wonder if here in Georgia the builders massively underbid in order to get it done, essentially. That isn't it. You know, Southern Company, Ed, we'll get off this to move on to national stuff. Southern Company's on the hook for two big projects. They got this expansion here that's the cost overruns are staggering, and they're also building a new coal-fired plant, not in Georgia.
In Mississippi.
And that has gone way, way over what it's projected cost.
It was a clean coal plant.
It was a clean coal plant. It was an experimental plant. They were trying to develop the technology to be able to burn coal with less emissions, once again dealing with the concerns over global warming. And it hadn't turned out the way it was expected to either. But to simply sort of build real quickly on what Jim asked me about earlier, I do want to throw in my favorite line that Mike Egan, who was my predecessor, warned me of when I came to the House.
In your district.
Which was, Edward, be careful what you vote for, because most of today's problems are the result of yesterday's solutions.
All right. Thank you for that. Melita, the news broke late yesterday afternoon. The Wall Street Journal had it first that, in fact, Robert Mueller, the special counsel on the Russia investigation, had begun a couple of weeks ago presenting information to a grand jury in Washington, D.C. He was already overseeing a grand jury that was meeting in Virginia to look specifically at the Michael Flynn interactions with Russian officials and other dealings with foreign leaders that he or foreign governments that he hadn't previously disclosed. But this is a new chapter, because the suggestion is, although we don't know this for a fact, that this is going beyond certainly Flynn and in Washington looking at perhaps Donald Trump's and his company's financial transactions, Donald Trump Jr. and his meeting with the Russians. This is a staggeringly important development. It does not mean that's going to lead to indictments. But when this happens, there is a pall cast over any administration that's subjected to this that's hard to get out from under.
I think about this grand jury investigation as being a little bit like the old saying, when there's smoke, there's fire. I think about this grand jury investigation as being like one of those thick, heavy smokes when the Okefenokee, the biggest swamp of all, is on fire. It takes weeks and months to put that thing out. It's going to take weeks and months for Mueller and his people to to get to the bottom of the swamp that Trump brought with him to Washington. And I also think that, you know, we really don't know where all they'll be able to go, but certainly having the power of grand jury subpoena to ensure that people who lie to those investigators will then be susceptible to perjury gives him a bigger hammer in his arsenal of investigative tools.
Jim, Melita said a really crucial matter. Not only will individuals be subject to subpoenas and therefore testify under oath, but now Mueller has complete power to subpoena every document he wants to get his hands on, which could include Donald Trump's tax returns.
Right, right. And I mean, Ed Lindsay here probably knows more about grand juries than I do. I have been, thankfully, I've never been part of one, never been called before one. But I would say that the one thing that this does put kind of the kibosh on, that is talk that President Trump might fire Mueller.
Well, it would create a firestorm,
yeah.
A bipartisan firestorm that I believe that the cooler heads, particularly with his new chief of staff, Kelly, is basically telling him, you know, that you don't simply need to go down this road. That said, I mean, you know, what we're seeing here, you know, history has shown in the past, is that special prosecutors tend to go, once they're in place, tend to go wherever they think the facts lead them. Keep in mind that Mr. Starr, back in the 1990s, was made a special prosecutor dealing with a land deal in Arkansas.
And ended up with Monica Lewinsky.
Now, I don't necessarily believe it's going to lead this way. I think Mr. Mueller is a lot more disciplined than that, perhaps. But nevertheless, you don't know where it's going to go. That said, my hope and a lot of other Republicans' hope is let Mr. Mueller do his job, let him go wherever the facts lead. And for God's sakes, you know, let's focus on the policy issues in Washington and have the president, somebody turn off the president's tweet.
You know, Ed, I want to ask you about that because I thought about something very similar to what you're saying when the news broke last night. Again, we all understand that impaneling a grand jury does not necessarily mean that the special counsel has evidence of a crime and is going to therefore try to convince the grand jury of that fact.
Yeah.
In this case, for certain.
Yeah. And keep in mind, this wasn't necessarily a newly impaneled grand jury either. This was simply using an existing one.
But here's what occurred to me. By impaneling by using the Washington grand jury, Mueller, in some ways, will not be Jim Comey. In other words, Jim Comey investigated Hillary Clinton and then became the target for all of the anger and hostility because he took on that investigation himself, came out with his own conclusions. But what Mueller is doing now is following a legal procedure that inoculates him from being looked at as a political operative who's trying to get Donald Trump. And perhaps he comes away with a clean bill?
He could very well come away with a clean bill. To sort of pick up on a point raised a moment ago, where there's smoke, there's fire. What I often tell juries when I hear that phrase is sometimes it's not smoke, it's fog. and so you got to try to figure out if it's smoke or if it's fog. And that's what we need to simply allow Mr. Mueller to do. He came into this with an impeccable credentials, bipartisan. Everybody that I've ever heard that had any dealings with him thinks he's a person of outstanding integrity. Let's let the man do his job, and let's have the president and the Congress, Republicans and Democrats, start dealing with those issues that affect our breakfast room tables.
But if you listen to President Trump in West Virginia last night,
and we're going to.
Okay.
You're really right on point, Jim Galloway. May I? Because, you know, I want to get your response.
Well, let me not get over my skis here. Go ahead.
And Melita, I really want to engage you in this, too, because you're exactly right, Jim. Trump went to West Virginia again, which was, I thought, sort of odd. I mean, it's not like there's a primary there that keeps bringing him back to try to win, except this is a state where he knows he's going to be greeted with incredible enthusiasm. He was just there a couple weeks ago. But here's one of the things, one of several things he said last night that we want to play for you right now.
The reason why Democrats only talk about the totally made-up Russia story is because they have no message, no agenda, and no vision. What the prosecutors should be looking at are Hillary Clinton's 33,000 deleted emails.
And the crowd chants, lock her up, lock her up. Let's listen to one more comment that Trump made to this crowd last night and then talk about it.
The Russia story is a total fabrication. It's just an excuse for the greatest loss in the history of American politics. That's all it is. Try winning at the voter booth.
So, obviously, the president, at least last night, Melita, wasn't feeling any particular pain over being news about the grand jury.
Well, obviously not. And, of course, he was in West Virginia for the formerly Republican Jim Justice, who got elected governor as a Democrat to switch back to the Republican Party. And the two of them, Justice and Trump, have a lot in common. They're both populist billionaires who own casinos and golf courses, and they are well known for putting their foot in their mouth. And Justice is, like Trump now, a climate change denier. And he also is a man who owes the federal government more than $15 million in back taxes. And so you wonder if Trump and he might be striking some sort of deal. So there's a lot going on with Justice.
You know, Jim, I want to play the final bite that we got from Trump, because this is the one really.
If it's the one, I think it's very bothersome.
It is. Let's listen.
So they're trying to cheat you out of the future and the future that you want. They're trying to cheat you out of the leadership you want with a fake story that is demeaning to all of us, and most importantly, demeaning to our country and demeaning to our Constitution.
All right, so Jim, you start this, and then I would love all of you to weigh in. This is Donald Trump, without talking to Mueller specifically, this is Trump challenging the structure of our government, challenging the notion of an independent counsel. It was a stunning remark.
I have listened to a lot of what Donald Trump has said over the last 6 months. I would say that sentence was probably the most dangerous thing I've ever heard him say.
Well, I agree with you. Let me put it this way. As a lawyer who's worked in the court system for 33 years, I believe in an independent court system. It is a fundamental bedrock of society. I don't like how the president sometimes goes after judges and goes after prosecutors and tries to politicize the process. And I'll tell you what, I didn't like it when President Clinton did it either to his special prosecutor. He and his allies also came after the special prosecutor, came after those who were looking into some of his various shenanigans and tried to politicize the process. I didn't like it then. I don't like what this president's doing now. And I didn't bring up Clinton to say, well, it's all right, because one did it, another should. Neither one of them should have done it. And those of us on both sides of the political aisle should sort of look at that sort of conduct and be very clear that that's unacceptable. That's why I like when folks like Lindsey Graham and others have stood up and say, that's not right. You can't do that.
Melita, you get the last word in this segment.
It's interesting he would use the word demeaning when there has been nothing more demeaning to the reputation of the United States worldwide than the conduct of our current president.
All right, that's a last word for the segment. We got a lot more to talk about. We got some of your tweets. We've got a couple of your voicemails we want to get to. And we want to talk about Jeff Sessions, who today said they're tripling down on finding the leakers in Washington. This is Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
The new White House chief of staff plunged into a week of dramatic developments on immigration, Russia, and more.
White House Anthony Scaramucci is out as White House communications
director. The most significant reform to our immigration system.
Bob Mueller has impaneled a grand jury here.
I'm Ari Shapiro. We'll make sense of the latest news with our Friday political analysts this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen this afternoon from 4 to 7 on your GPB station. I'm Nina Totenberg. Are you someone who talks about how great public radio is, but you're still not a donor? Rather than wait for the next pledge drive, you can support the programs you love by donating that unwanted vehicle. It's served you well over the years and can still get you around town, but let's face it, it's just taking up space. Donate it today. It could be worth hundreds of dollars to this station, and you could get a tax deduction.
Go to gpb.org/cars and thanks.
We're back. Jim Galloway, Melita Easters, Ed Lindsay. By the way, Ed Lindsay, you got a tweet. Alan Fox, who tweets at Alan Fox, says, great hearing Ed Lindsay on politics. Political Rewind today. We miss him in the state legislature. Your brother-in-law's listening, and I think that's fabulous.
I appreciate
and,
it.
And we've decided in the for her last day here at GPB, because nobody has more opinions about political news than our producer, Lisa Clark, to ask you, Lisa, to yes. sit in for this final few minutes before you go off to HLN.
Well, you know what a political junkie I am,
you
Bill,
are,
so this is always a treat.
Yeah, you are the ultimate. Jim, so let me just set it up. People who are paying as much attention to political news as our listeners do and as this people in this room do know that yesterday the Washington Post released transcripts of President Trump's phone conversations that we already knew a little bit about because they'd made news at the time with Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto and Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull. And the transcripts show that two things. One, that with Nieto, he said, look, who pays for the wall isn't that big a deal in reality, but from a political point of view, it's important to me. So just go along with me on this.
We'll take care of it.
And then it turns out with Turnbull, the conversation which Trump tweeted later, fake news, said it was a rough conversation. The transcript shows, Lisa, it was a very rough conversation.
It had to have been extremely uncomfortable for Malcolm Turnbull, I think, to hear some of the things that Trump was saying, particularly about immigration.
Okay, so here's the thing. It's really, and I throw this out to all of you, for transcripts of a president's private conversations with world leaders to be released is really startling.
Look, you know, there was Scaramucci, God bless him.
I remember him.
Yeah.
Good riddance.
He's getting a book deal probably right now.
But before he left, he said that there are people within the White House and within the executive branch who are trying to protect the United States against from Donald Trump. And I think this is one of those things. I'm a journalist. I will never object to somebody giving me information. That was probably a mistake.
Yeah, a mistake to publish.
To publish. Mm-hmm. Well, no, not to publish.
No, to turn
a mistake
it over.
To leak.
One of the most interesting comments that I've heard over the last 24 hours since that came out was from Paul Begala, you know, who worked for President Clinton, very loyal to President Clinton, worked in the White House, knows the importance of sometimes, you know, keeping secrets and allowing the president to have private conversations. And he was extremely troubled about the fact that these transcripts were being leaked out. Because he thought it was very important for presidents to be able to have these private conversations and sometimes very blunt conversations with foreign leaders, to have sort of that free dialogue with the idea that if these start to all come out and be leaked out, it's simply going to freeze the conversation, not just for President Trump, but for anybody who he's talking to. And so I agree with him there.
You know, Melita, Lisa, there are a lot of people out there who really dislike President Trump, and so they're delighted when they see this sort of news. But even at, you've got a Paul Begala, Lisa,
David
you pointed
Axelrod.
Out David Axelrod, mm-hmm. who's one of Obama's closest aides. They're very concerned.
Senator Mark Warner, you mentioned.
Yeah, the Democrat Mark Warner. This is deeply concerning when this is where we're headed.
It sets a dangerous precedent, I think, is the problem, because then if it's okay in this administration, then all bets are off for anything down the road.
And it's very similar, and I don't mean to cut, but it's very similar to the hacking and the release of the emails from the State Department and those documents during the President Obama's administration. Mm-hmm. Now, there were some partisans who were championing that, but that was equally troubling because those were private correspondence between our Secretary of State in particular and foreign leaders.
Melita?
But in some ways, this leak gave cover to the President of Mexico, who was coming under heat for things Trump said he said. This leak proved he did not. And it kept the president of Mexico from having to look at Donald Trump, point his finger and say, liar, liar, pants on fire.
And actually, if you're on the internet, go find David Frum and take a look at what he's written on this. And he was saying that to him, that was a sign that these leaks were coming, might have been coming from U.S. intelligence, because those two conversations were actually... They made U.S. The U.S. partners, both of them, look good, and they were on topics that had already been leaked to the gist of the conversation was already out there.
Yeah.
But here's what's fascinating about this: this all plays to Trump's benefit among his base. I mean, two things happen with this. Number one, his base loves that he's tough. I'm not sure they like the Mexican story. I mean, that's troubling. But with Turnbull, they're thrilled, right, that he's being a hard guy. But more important than that, this is another example of the media tormenting Donald Trump and attacking him in a really inappropriate way, according to his base.
Well, I think you have to ask the question: who are the people who are so freaked out about a Trump presidency that they're willing to leak this kind of information? What's going on that makes them so uneasy that they think, it's better if I get this kind of stuff out there?
Yeah, but this isn't like someone releasing some type of scandal, of information about a scandal.
For instance,
this is not a deep throat situation where I am revealing a criminal activity. This is purely political.
So I want to jump in, and I apologize, except we're getting short. By coincidence, Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, had a news conference scheduled today, Melita, in which he was going to talk about leakers, maybe because the president has been berating him for not cracking down on leakers. He's been humiliating him publicly over that. And Sessions said, we're tripling the number of leaks that we're looking into. Here's part of what he said.
We respect the important role that the press plays, and we'll give them respect. But it is not unlimited. They cannot place lives at risk with impunity. We must balance the press's role with protecting our national security and the lives of those who serve in the intelligence community, the armed forces, and all law-abiding Americans.
There are two things to unpack in this, Jim. One is that Sessions indicated that they might be looking at the media and its subpoena power to force journalists to come into court and reveal their sources. And the other side of it is when you talk about leakers, Sessions does not differentiate between leakers who reveal national security, proprietary evidence that is secrets of the country, and things that are embarrassing to the administration.
Right. I mean, there's been in past administrations, Republican and Democrat have focused on the people who convey the information, not the journalists who publicize it.
Although President Obama tried to do that.
Yes, he
did.
His administration
tried.
That's absolutely right.
And he got pushed back on that.
He got slapped
on that. So this is another trip. But I think what you're going to see is news organizations kind of lawyer up and get very strict in how they receive and how they treat the information that
they say
given.
Lawyer up as if that's a bad thing.
As news.
Melita.
Well, and as news organizations lawyer up, Hollywood will be delivering a blockbuster movie around the holiday season with Meryl Streep portraying Katharine Graham.
Yeah, that's right.
In the papers, a big movie about this very subject, leaks and press freedom. And so Hollywood's answer.
This is on Deep Throat, right?
Mm-hmm. No, this is on the it's on the Pentagon Papers.
Deep Throat was
Watergate.
Yeah. Okay, all right. There's another movie out there with Liam Neeson where the state capitol plays the role of D.C.
It's also important to point out, Ed, you're the attorney in the room, that there is a whistleblower act that protects those in government who reveal information as long as it isn't national security protected information, as long as it's not in some ways secret information. The Whistleblower Act protects the people who give information to the media.
It does, but getting back to my point a little while ago, it protects those that are revealing information regarding criminal conduct or misconduct, even if it's in
a civil way. It's not broader than that?
Basically, that's what whistleblower statutes are designed to do, to try to encourage folks to come forward who know of some kind of misconduct, whether it be civil or criminal. That's what they're there for. I don't believe that they would protect someone, for instance, that revealed the transcripts from the telephone conversation.
Okay, that's going to be...
That's simply embarrassing.
That's simply embarrassing. But that gets back to a point Jim made a moment ago. It's one thing to go after those that are leaking the information. It's another thing to go after the press who prints the information after it's been revealed to them. Last time I checked, the First Amendment still says the same thing.
That's prior restraint. Yeah.
We're almost out of time. I do want to get this in. Trump is off on a 14-day vacation, and one of our tweeters— Just say no to Trump. Do you think this vacation is a palace coup to sequester him so they can invoke the 25th Amendment? I think Kelly engineered it. We have some very, very peculiarly conspiratorial-minded listeners out there, and thank goodness for them. We really are out of time. Melita Easters, thank you so much for being here. Ed, Lindsay, great to have you back. Jim Galloway, always, you'll be back with us on Monday when Brian Robinson and Theron Johnson will be here, girded for the usual Monday battle that they engage in.
But not Lisa Clark.
Not Lisa Clark, and that's how we want to end the show today. Lisa, it has been, without question, a phenomenal joy to have worked with you. Your passion for politics is wonderful, and I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed working with you. You're one of the smartest people I know in the business, so all the best luck when you go over to Carol Costello over there at Headline News, HLN.
I have said that this was a very difficult decision, and it was. I have loved, I started working on your show in January, shortly before, yes, shortly before Trump was inaugurated.
All right, as we go out, though, we have a little treat for you.
Okay.
Lisa, certain differences, rivalries, if you will, have come up between us. At first, I thought we could talk it over
Bart.
Like civilized people, but instead...
You're fired.
I'll miss you.
Lisa Clark, thank you so much for everything you've done to make this show better. And again, thank you to all of you for being here today. You know, you're a great panel. We should try to get you all back together at another time. It's really been a pleasure to have you on the show. We are back Monday at 2 o'clock. And as I said, Brian Robinson and Theron Johnson will be here with us on that day. Next week, we've got a really good two-way street for you on Thursday. We'll talk more about it at the beginning of the week. I'll just say one word about it right now. Robots. That's it for us for today. Have a great weekend. I'm Bill Nigut. See you Monday at 2.
Thank you.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out.